Rabbi Soloveitchik once told us that he used to commute between Boston and New York by plane. So once he was on the plane and he saw a Reform rabbi there, and he was all upset. Why the Reform will remarry a woman who never got a get from her first husband? So he walked over to the rabbi and it was all huffy. And he said, how can you allow such a thing? It's against us, Eres Adibris Loisinov. How can you allow the women to remarry without a get? So the Reform rabbi said, Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. You don't know that whatever the 1892 convention in Pittsburgh, we voted that there's no need for a get. So he said, what do you mean you made a convention? You can't make a convention. How can you decide against the Din HaTorah? So he said, Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. You don't know the Talmudic principle that Dina de Malchusa Dina. We follow the law of the land, so as soon as the woman gets a civil divorce, so she's allowed to remarry. So Rav Soloveitchik was upset, so he said, so why do you ever perform a marriage? Why don't you just let him go get married by the justice of the peace? So he said, Dr. Soloveitchik, I'm surprised at you. You don't know the difference. When you perform a marriage, you recite a blessing. So that's a mitzvah. So in a mitzvah, Din HaMachusa doesn't apply. But when you give a divorce, you don't recite any blessing. That's not a mitzvah. So Din HaMachusa applies there. That's just the law. Din HaMachusa applies. So there's a mikta semis there. It's a sheker, but there's a mikta semis here. The din of the machusa only applies in the area of dini mamonis. It clearly doesn't apply to isa v'heta. Whether you say a bracha, you don't say a bracha. In the area of isa v'heta, din of the machusa does not apply. Every several years we have a visit from the cardinals from Europe. They're trying to figure out how come in Europe whoever goes to university isn't interested in attending a theological seminary. And here we have both in the same institution. We have the students in the same classrooms. They teach college classes and they teach rabbinical studies at the same time. How come by us it works and by them it doesn't work? So first they thought that it must be the secret to success must be the Chavrusa system. So they came to study the Chavrusa system. So they realized that has nothing to do with that. One of these days they'll come to the realization there's a difference between the true faith, the true religion, and the false religion. Avodah Zarah and the true religion. So this year, the last time they came, I forgot when it was, it was the day that there was the massacre in Toulouse. And the Cardinal of Toulouse was here that day. So was it this year or before the summer? I forgot already. I lost track. So they came. The Rosh HaMedabrim is the Cardinal of Paris, because the one who started the whole thing was Cardinal Lustiger, who was originally born a Jew, and he converted, became a Meshuman. So he came to the yeshiva, and he's the one who realized that by us there's no contradiction, and maybe we can help them out to figure out how can they do it that there won't be a contradiction. So even though he passed away already, so the Cardinal of Paris is the Rosh HaMedabrim. So the last time they were there, so he gave a whole, he speaks English better than the others, but he doesn't speak well. So he had a whole drasha all written out in English, and he was reading it, he was presenting it. So he was explaining as follows. Yeshiva University, we follow Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik is centrist orthodoxy. And somehow they succeed in being considered orthodox, even though they live a regular, normal life. So they understand that the secret to success is Dina, the Malchus Adina. That we follow the law of the land, we lead a life like the Goyim, and we're still called orthodox at the same time. So they want to know what's the secret. How does Dina, the Malchus Adina, how can it work, and you're still considered orthodox? So Dr. Lehm had to be mopsikim in the middle. He said, Dina, Malchus Adina just means you have to pay tax. It has nothing to do with it. We follow the same Shulchan Aruch that they follow in Me'ah Shorim. It's just a question of emphasis, question of style, but it's the exact same Shulchan Aruch, the same Mishnah Berurah, the same Yeridaya, the same Chesh Mish, everything is the same. So that's number one. Dina Malchus Adina only applies in Dini Mamanis. It doesn't apply in Issa Leheta, that's for sure. Just because in America they keep the stores open on Shabbos and they close on Sunday doesn't mean that we're allowed to keep our stores open on Shabbos and close on Sunday. Where does Dina Machusa, the Gemara says Dina Machusa Dina with respect to paying taxes? The Gemara says you got to pay your taxes, and if you cheat on taxes, you're a ganav. Whom are you stealing from? So in the days of the Gemara, until recently, the Rambam writes, you're stealing Menasa Melech, you're stealing from the king. The king is entitled to levy taxes in order to enrich himself, or the governor is entitled to levy taxes in order to enrich himself. Once you live in a democracy, so the idea behind paying taxes is totally different. The idea behind paying taxes is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Chaim, in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, in Chosh HaMishpat, in Hilchos Shutfim, that all the people who live in the community are considered Shutfim with respect to all of the needs that they all share in common. So we're all considered Shutfim, that we have to put up money to build a shul, and to hire a rabbi, and to hire a chazan, and to make a mikveh. and to make a school, whatever the community needs together. So in America, let's say there's certain things that are taken care of by the federal government. Mail delivery is taken care of by the federal government. The army to protect our country is taken care of by the federal government. The state government takes care of forests and takes care of highways. Certain highways they take care of. So we're all shutfim with respect to the forests. And then the local, the municipal government takes care of the fire department and the garbage collection, the water purification, and all in the education of the children. So whenever you have a shutfus, you go bus or ride. So most of the people in New York City are in favor of public schools. The religious Jews don't use the public schools. So that's the din. Whenever you have a shutfus, if the majority of the shutfim want to go in one direction, so the minority are mechuyev to pay for the needs that they all agreed upon, basically, you go bus or ride. You can't say each person is going to have his own way. That's what a democracy, everybody expresses their opinion and the majority rules. The Vilna Gaon says on that, din chosh mishpat, that you follow the majority, says, as it says in Chumash, achar rab lahatas. The Pesuk in Chumash is talking about dayonim and a din Torah. And the Vilna Gaon says that it applies, the Tosefta says like this, when you have a shutfus, you go bas arayv. So the Vilna Gaon says the mocker is the Pesuk, achar rab lahatas. So there's a famous run in Nedorim, on Dav Chav Ches and Aleph. As I say, people don't know what it says till Dav Chav Ches, they don't know what it says after Dav Chav Ches. They only know one run on Dav Chav Ches, that you don't have to pay tax in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Ran quotes in the name of the Balei HaTosfos. Why is that? So the Balei HaTosfos were of the opinion that the theory behind paying taxes is that the country belongs to the king, Great Britain belongs to the Queen of England, and France belongs to the King of France, and whatever every country in Belgium belongs to the King of Belgium, the Queen of Belgium, whatever. And they have the right to charge you rent if you want to. If I have an apartment building, you want to live in my building, I have a right to charge you rent. So the king has a right to charge you rent if you want to live in his country. So how much rent does he charge? So he says, let's divide it in a fair way. Everyone will pay income tax, and that'll be considered the rent. If you don't want to pay the rent, then I don't want you to live in my country. I ask you to leave. So years ago, so that's what the Ran says. So this is only in every other country in the world except for Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he invited all the Jewish people to live in Eretz Yisrael. So who has the right to charge us any rent? We have the right to live in Eretz Yisrael without paying any rent. So therefore the whole theory behind taxes doesn't apply. So therefore you're not mechuyev to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Ran says in the Darm Daf Chav Ches, and I'm quoting the Balei HaTosfos. Sometimes in Shulchan Aruch they quote an opinion and they reject it. This opinion is not even quoted. This opinion doesn't even have honorable mention at all. Totally rejected. Shulchan Aruch, different sections of the Shulchan Aruch are based on different passages in different Rishonim. So this section of taxation in the Shulchan Aruch is quoting verbatim from the Rambam, where the Rambam writes, not only in Eretz Yisrael does the government have the right to levy taxes, even a non-Jewish government in Chutz Lortz also has the right to levy taxes. So the Rambam starts off with Eretz Yisrael. Even in Chutz Lortz, you apply din in the Machus. In Sefer Shmuel, we have what's called Parshas HaMelech. Bnei Yisrael requested of Shmuel HaNavi that they want to have a king. And Shmuel was upset. What's wrong with me? I was the shofet. Why are you rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What do you need a melech for? So finally, he gives in to that. And Rabbanu Shlom says he should appoint Shaul HaMelech. Fine. Then later, they appoint David HaMelech. So when Shmuel HaNavi is trying to dissuade the people from appointing a king, so he starts giving him the riot act. So he says, you're going to have a king, he's going to charge taxes, he's going to take your children to the army, he's going to take your daughters as pilakshim, and noshim is going to do whatever he wants. So the Gemara has a machlekes in Sanhedrin, the second parak on Sanhedrin, that's called Parshas HaMelech. All the things that Shmuel mentions, are these the evils of the king, that this is Shaloi Kedin? Kolom Parshas Melech, Melech Osebo, this is Keneged Adin? Oh no, we paskin like Shmuel, Kolom Parshas Melech, Melech Mutabo. These are the legitimate rights and privileges of the king. So we assume that, of course, the king can charge tax in Eretz Yisrael. The original pasuk is Parshas HaMelech. And Sefer Shmuel, when Shmuel is talking about a Jewish king ruling over Eretz Yisrael. So that's what the Ran quotes in the name of the Balei HaTosfos. That in Eretz Yisrael, Machus, it doesn't apply. The government has the right to charge tax. So that Ran is not even quoted at all in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam there. The Rambam says, not only in Eretz Yisrael does the Jewish king have a right to charge tax, even the rest of the world. So what is the din of din and machus? Why does he have a right to charge tax? Not based on rent, whatever. It's a din. The king has a right to charge tax. So So in the days of the years ago, in the days of the Gemara, days of the Rishonim, that the taxes were collected in order to enrich the king. So there was a whole debate in the Rishonim. What is the theory behind taxes based on Bizman Hazeh? It says in Shulchan Aruch, Bizman Hazeh, the taxes are just the governor of New York and the king, the president of the United States is also entitled to a salary. They have a job. We have a brera to elect whomever we want as the governor, whoever we want as the president of the United States. And we were the ones who voted in. Our representatives voted how much salary they should get. So they're entitled to get a salary. The taxes are not paid to enrich the king or to enrich the governor. The taxes are paid in order to balance, in order to pay for all the things that in the shutfas. So whoever doesn't pay taxes today, the government collecting the taxes is like a secretary working in an office. They collect the taxes and they take care of all of the things. The federal government takes care of the mail delivery and the army, and the state government takes care of the forests and the highways, and the municipal government takes care of the schools and the garbage collection and the water purification and so on. And whoever does pay taxes, not stealing from the government, he's stealing from the other Jews who are paid taxes. He's stealing from all the other shutfim. So it's not a shaila of hafkos halva osoy. There was a pilpul years ago. If you don't pay taxes, so you're stealing from the government, but you're not stealing b'kumbi asay. You're just not paying the choyb that you owe the goyish government. So the majority of the poskim held that hafkos halva osoy. In this case, you are mechuyif to pay. And there was always a minority opinion, not mechuyif to pay taxes. But today, what does that discuss? Whoever doesn't pay taxes, stealing from all the other shutfim, from all the other Jewish and non-Jewish partners. Who are paying taxes, because we're all paying in order to cover all the expenses. So that's the original passage in the Gemara that the Gemara says quite a few times, Dina Mechusa Dina, goes with respect to paying taxes. So that's a Gemara, that everybody agrees. Then everybody agrees also, the Shach and Hilchas Ribbis points out, everybody agrees also, the Halacha makes a distinction between Tiva and Peira, Matbeis and commodities. So usually Shove Kesef is Kekesef. When we get married, we give a ring. So that's Shove Kesef Dina Kekesef. Taisus and Rola Vishayim on the first Mishnah Masachas Kiddushin. And there are a few rare instances. The Gemara has three cases where Shove Kesef is Lav Dina Kekesef. The most obvious one is Pigyamai Susheni. Everybody knows that. Vitzarta Kesef Biyadecha. It says the word Kesef repeated several times. So the Gemara in the Mishnayis in Maaseh Sheni and the Gemara Perek Hazov and other places, the Gemara says, can only be paid in Maaseh Sheni on Matbeis, on Kesef. You can't be paid in Maaseh Sheni on a Shove Kesef. So the Shach writes in Yeridei and Hilchas Ribbis, it's Nageh to Hilchas Ribbis, also a little bit this idea. The Shach writes, what establishes whether something is Kesef? Kesef doesn't mean silver. If you have a bar of silver, that's Shove Kesef. That's not Kesef. Kesef means Kesh. How do you determine whether something is kesh or something is a commodity, shove kesef? So that's the kesh is what's declared as legal tender by a legitimate government. If you have a bunch of pirates who mint their own coins and everyone's afraid to fight with the mafia, they're afraid to fight with the pirates, they're going to kill us. But they're not really a legitimate government. And if they mint coins, that's not called a matbea. Matbea al pidin is if the legitimate government is sponsoring the coins. So the Turekarta loonies in Eretz Yisrael who claim that the Israeli government is a bunch of pirates, that they're not recognized. So then if they'll be consistent, I don't know if they are, if they'll be consistent, they can't use Israeli coins for the purpose of Pidyon Maaseh Sheni. Rabbi Yashiv used Israeli coins. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used all the tzaddikim. Chazon Ish used Israeli coins. Everybody used Israeli coins. Everybody used Israeli coins. The loonies. They hold that the government in Eretz Yisrael is not a government, that they're a bunch of pirates. If it's a bunch of pirates, are the coins that they mint are not recognized as coins. Yeah, the shaila is, let's say, here in the neighborhood, you have Breuer's community. So every year, in the beginning of the year, in Tishrei, so they printed in their newsletter that Rabbi Neuwirth, the author of the Shemir Shabbos Kol Chosa, went to Cheder as a young child. He went to Yeshiva Ktana, together with many of the old-timers here in Germany, in the community. So he has a pruta chamur, he has a coin in Yerushalayim. He lives in Beit Vegans, he has a coin in Yerushalayim, which he uses for Pidyon Maaseh Sheni. And whoever is a member of Breuer, he gives you permission to use his coin if you want to be paid in Maaseh Sheni. So the question is, does that help? The Israeli, he uses an Israeli coin, he lives in Eretz Yisrael, he's paid in Maaseh Sheni in Eretz Yisrael. We live in America. So when you say it has to be a coin that's recognized as legal tender by that government, which government? let's say that my Sushaini that I have that I want to be paida is in Canada, and I'm in New York, and my matbea that I want to use is in Yerushalayim. So which coin is recognized al pidin as a matbea? Israeli coins, because that's where the coin is, or American coins, that's where the person who's doing the pidyon is, or Canadian coins, that's where the payers are. When you say the coins have to be recognized as legal tender in that country, which country? The makom where the person is who's doing the pidyon ma'aseh, the makom where the coin is, and the makom where the payers are. The three logical possibilities. So there's a beferish gemara in the end of Baba Kama. Takes a stand on this, and there are two girsas in the gemara, the Rambam and the Raivin. He could have had three girsas, but lucky there are only two girsas in the gemara. So the Rambam, it's in Hilchas Ma'aseh Sheni, Perek Dalet. So the Rambam's girsa in the gemara is it all depends where the person is. If I'm in New York and I'm using a coin in Eretz Yisrael, it has to be an American coin. I can't use an Israeli coin if I'm in New York. And the Raivid had the Girsa in the Gemara, the way it's printed in our editions of the Gemara, that it all depends where the coin is. If the coin is in Eretz Yisrael, so then if it's an Israeli coin, then it's good for the purpose of Pidyon Ma'aseh Sheni. So that's one there. The Gemara in Pcheres Daf Nun Aleph has three dinim, which depend Davka on Kesef, and Shavi Kesef is not acceptable. So the most famous din is a din deraisa that Pidyon Ma'aseh Sheni can only be done with coins, has only with Kesef, can be done with Shavi Kesef. So that's the Shachan Hilchas Ribbis writes that al pidin, kesef is legal tender if it's recognized by the government, a legitimate government of that country where the coin is, not where the depending on Rambam and the Ravid, where the Rambam says where the person is and the Ravid says where the coin is. Okay. Then many assume in Shulchan Aruch there's a big machlokes about this. Many assume that Dina de Malchus Adina also applies. The government has the right and the obligation to institute Chukim Mishpatim Bein Adam L'Chaver. They have to figure out a legal system. One of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach is Dinim. One of the seven Dinim is Dinim. So Dinim, many assume, means that the government has the right to institute Chukim Mishpatim. So let's say in America, they have Chukim Mishpatim, they have the laws of Yerusha. If a person dies, his wife yarshins. And if a person's spouse is not alive, so the sons and the daughters yarshin equally, and there is no Dina Pchor, Neitel Pishnai. So do we follow this? That when the husband dies, the wife gets the Yerusha? And when a person dies, the sons and the daughters yarshin equally, we have a Choshe Mishpo, we have Dini Hatar, we have a whole state in the Zikin. So in Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Rashba, that when the government has the right to institute Chukim and Mishpot and Miral Machaveira, they're supposed to, that's the mitzvah of Dinim, that they should introduce Chukim and Mishpotim. That's only at least if one of the parties involved is a non-Jew. If both parties involved are Jewish, then we follow Choshe Mishpo, then we don't follow Dinim and Malchus Adina. That's the Rashba. There was a young, when Rabbi Yosef Kara lived in Tzfat, there was a young Tam Chacham who aged after Rabbi Yosef Kara died. So he, when he was very young, his name was Maharit Tzahalon, Rabbi Yontev Tzahalon. Maharitatz, there was another Maharitatz who lived the same time, he was the rabbi in Constantinople. His name was Rabbi Yosef Taitatzak, not to be confused with each other, they're two different people. One lived in Tzfat, Marit Tzahalon, Rabbi Yosef Taitatzak was there. Each one was colorful in his own way. Each one has a set of chuvas, and they're both quoted in Achrayim and Shulchan Aruch. So that Marit Tzahalon writes in his chuvas that when he was a young man, he was requested by the Rabbanim at Tzfat to go visit all the Jewish communities in the neighboring Arab countries, and to tell them that they're not allowed to follow Din in the Machusa with respect to Yerusha, because in Yerusha all the parties involved are Jewish. So you're not supposed to follow Dini Machusa. We follow Dini HaTorah, that if the wife dies, the husband gets the Yerusha. The husband dies, the children get the Yerusha. The wife doesn't get the Yerusha. The wife is entitled to get the Ksuba. Ksuba is a lot of money these days. Depends on the value of silver. And then when a person dies, so the sons get Yerusha, the daughters don't get the Yerusha. And the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama says, Rama quotes from the Rishonim already. The Rama lived in the 1500s in Krakow, in Poland. But he quotes in the days of the Rishonim that if you're afraid that the daughters are going to feel hurt, that the sons are going to get Yerusha, the daughters are going to get nothing, so they'll always hold a grudge against their brothers. was taking all the Yerusha, to hold the grudge against her father, why he didn't see to it that he should leave something for the daughters. So in the days of the Rishonim, in the days of the Ramah, this problem used to be solved by every person making out a will. A will, the Halacha sometimes says that you can make out a will. Let's say I have three sons. So one of my sons is in business and the other two sons are in learning. So the son is in business, making a lot of money on his own. Two sons learning. I'm never going to be rich people. So the Halacha says, I can say, none of them is a pchor. My oldest is a girl. I don't have a din of pishlam. I don't have any pchor. So if I want, I can say instead of the three sons yashining, one third, I can say that that the one who's in business, he's doing well, he should get 15%, 20%, and the other should get 40% each. You can fiddle around with the percentages from all of the children who are Roy Lirash. They're in line to get something, so you can change the proportions. That's the din of Rabbi Yechon and Mabroika in the Mishnah Bava Basra and Kuf Lamed Amar Aleph. But if you pick out Bas B'Mokam Banim, you leave a will that you want the daughter to get equally, so the Mishnah says that doesn't help. The daughter's not in line to get a penny. If you have sons, I have three sons and six daughters, so the daughters are not in line to get anything. So the daughters will not Yarshim. Rabbi Yechon Mabroika's din doesn't apply. So the Rishonim came up with an Einfall, that the father can be mischayv himself, he can make it his chayvus to give the daughters a chelek chatzi zocher, to give the daughters a share as if she were half a son. Each son will get one unit of Yerusha and the daughter will get a half a unit. They say the name Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that he thinks that today that's not going to help. The daughter is only a half a child, half wit, what's wrong? You have to give the daughters equal share to the sons. Okay. That's what he says, that they'll never forgive the father, and he's afraid the daughters won't will be upset why they were only treated as a chelek chatzi zocher. So the Maritz Alon writes this, that he was sent by the Rabbanim in Tzfat to visit all of the Arab countries, all of the Jewish communities, the Arab countries near Eretz Yisrael, to tell them that Din Malchusa doesn't apply when it comes to Yerusha, because all of the people involved, they're all Jewish, all the Tzadim are Jewish, so they have to follow Dine HaTorah and have to make out a will according to the Dine HaTorah. If they want to give something to the wife, or they want extra to the wife more than the Ksuba, you want to give something to the daughters, so you have to make a Hischaibis on that. Pardon me? You can leave out the son. The Gemara says it's not right. The Gemara tells it that Yossi ben Yoezer, who was one of the Zugas, he was one of the, he was the chief rabbi. Yossi ben Yoezer, Yossi ben Yochanan, and Yishalayim were the chief rabbi and assistant chief rabbi. The Nasi and the Abbez, he lived as Manabayas. So he had a son who was a Balabas. His son was not a Tana. And he was so upset why his son didn't sit and learn like a Tana. So he cut him out from the whole Yerusha, and he left the whole, how much did he have already? $25. So he left his whole Yerusha to the Beis HaMikdash. The other Tanoim said, you're not allowed to do that, you're not allowed to do that. He says he doesn't care, he's upset. So the Gemara says he did wrong. Then the Gemara says that his son donated more than he ever gave to the Beis HaMikdash. He wasn't right on the whole thing. The Gemara says it's not proper to leave out one of the children, even if the child doesn't really deserve it, unless it's mamish. Unless he gave the parents such agmas nefesh, unless the children are not religious, totally not religious, they're intermarried or something like that, or they gave tremendous agmas nefesh, and then you have a right to leave him out. But just because the child wasn't such a wonderful child, and he didn't fulfill kibbutah properly, so it says in Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara, that's not right. You shouldn't be Marben Achlan. You shouldn't be Abu Recha Santa. That's a whole discussion. How much do you have to leave to the children, to the Yorshim? So there were poskim who are of the opinion you have to leave 51% of the Yerusha to the Yorshim. And then the 49% Roiv of whatever, all of your assets, you have to leave to the Yorshim who are entitled to Yerusha. And then the rest you can give to others. And that's not the generally accepted opinion. So the other extreme, that's Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky, who wrote the Sefer Gesher Achaim, the three volumes Gesher Achaim and Hilchas Avelos. He has a whole chapter about how you can make out a tzavoah and how you can finagle with to change the percentages of Yerusha. So that was his practice. He held like that. You have to leave 51%. He quotes the earlier poskim said like that. And from the $25 that he had to leave over the Yerusha, he was a poor man. With all of his degrees and everything, he was not a wealthy man. So when he left his Yerusha, so he left 51% to his son. and 49% he gave to others. And the other extreme, the Tzais HaChoshen quotes a tshuva from the Gaonim, as long as he leave $5 to the Yorshim, that's enough. And that's not generally accepted. Based on a Mishnah in Ksubas, if you leave 4 dinarim, that's nothing with nothing. So generally accepted is Rav Moshe Feinstein quotes from the Chasam Sofer that you have to leave a significant amount to the Yorshim. So Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote the tshuva 60 years ago. So he writes, if you leave $1,000 to each Yorish, that's a significant amount. $1,000 today is to buy a cigar. What can you buy with $1,000? You can't get too much. You can go on the bus in New York City. What can you get for $1,000? You get a year's worth of traveling on the bus in New York City, can't get you too far. So, and every generation means a significant amount. So it's $25,000, something like that, to each one of the Yorshim. So that's a din not to be Mava Nachla. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very surprising tshuva, where he says, correct, that we don't follow din and the Malchusa when it comes to Yerusha, but if a person makes a secular will, he gives a whole shtickle Torah, why he thinks that the secular will, if you go to a lawyer and you fill out a will, and it's a legal binding, and the court will only recognize the last will and testament, so he holds it al pidin, that's a kinyan, and that's legally binding, and that's what he did. He made a secular will, and that was all. And Rav Moshe doesn't even, is printed in his tshuvas, this tacked on at the end of a tshuva in Chelek Aven Ezer. He didn't even feel that it was significant enough to put it in a separate tshuva in Chelek Hoshem Mishpura, it belongs. He didn't even write many, after Rav Moshe disagreed, the Pashtus is not like Rav Moshe. Many disagree with Rav Moshe, they hold that the halacha would not recognize a secular will. The halacha would recognize that it's kibbut av. If the father said he wants the sons and the daughters to get an equal share and made a secular will, so the Bezin wouldn't force the sons to give an equal share to the daughters, let's say. But they would say, Mishkam mitam kiburav, you should listen to what the father said. But the Bezin is not kaifan kiburav. The Gemara says kiburav is one of the mitzvahs that the Bezin shalmata is not kaifan. Kiburav yem is a mitzvah, says shematan schor besida. The Chumash promises, if you fulfill kiburav, you'll be blessed with an arichas yomim. So the Gemara has a klal in Perakol HaBosar. Kol mitzvah says shematan schor besida. So people should be encouraged on their own to do the mitzvah. The Torah promises a reward. So you don't need the bezin to force people. People know on their own. If they do the mitzvah, they'll have arichas yamim. And if not, they won't have arichas yamim. So you're not kofa. Unfortunately, very often, big fights ensue after somebody dies by the most religious people, Hasidim and Misnagdim and everyone. Someone dies and there's something unclear with the Yerusha, so they'll have the biggest fights, and no one cares about the kibbut aviyim. Unfortunately, it's one of those neglected mitzvahs that people don't realize that it still applies even b'zman hazeh. It's still a din d'oraisa, even b'zman hazeh, kibbut aviyim. Nothing changed there. So it's usually assumed that in Yerusha we don't apply din de malchusa, and a secular will not be binding. So in Shulchan Aruch they tell you how to make a proper will. How do you make a hischaibus to give to your wife more than she would be entitled to based on the ksuba alona, or how to give to the daughters and so on? So again, when all the parties involved are Jewish, we don't follow din and the malchusa. The shach in Choshen Mishpat writes there are two exceptions to the rule. One he quotes from Rishon and one he says on his own. So the one he has on his own is a chiddush. He says whenever the halach has nothing to say in this case, then we follow din in the machusa, even though all the parties involved are Jewish. So the Chazon Ish quotes the Shach and he says, it doesn't exist. What do you mean the halacha has nothing to say? The halacha doesn't talk about computers. It doesn't talk about buying something by eBay or something like that. But we can figure out based on the halacha what the din will be. The klolim and halacha cover every single case. What do you mean there are no cases? What do you mean? A trust, let's say the halacha doesn't have anything to say about trust, but you figure out what the din is in a situation when you put money in trust for somebody else. Halacha covers every single case. So the Chazon Ish says he doesn't know what the Shach is talking about. Whenever the halacha has nothing to say, follow din and machusa, the halacha covers every single case. So that's a difficult Shach. Then the Shach quotes another exception to the rule where din and machusa does apply, even though all the parties involved are Jewish. So he writes like this: what if I deal in business with Jews and with non-Jews? So when I deal with the non-Jews, I have to keep in mind the din and the machusa. When I deal with Jews, I have to screw my head on differently and have in mind dini ha-Torah. I have to make all the conditions in accordance to the dini ha-Torah. What if a man comes in, I don't know if he's Jewish or he's not Jewish, I have to ask him, are you Jewish? So he's going to say, what's the difference? I say, well, Dina Machusa doesn't apply. I have to know whether you're Jewish or non-Jewish. So the Shach quotes from the Mordechai. What if, let's say, you have a merchant is selling merchandise, and he says both parties are Jewish, the customer who's buying and the merchant who's selling, who's delivering, and he says, I'm selling you the merchandise, and I'm selling it ala tanai on the condition that all the laws of the government, all the business laws of Din al-Machusa should apply. So if you agree, the Din is kol tanai shel b'mamakai. Usually we have a Din master mashakasa b'toira. The tanai is batel. Let's say a man marries a woman and he says, I'm marrying you on the condition, in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, they have a lot of chalitzas. A young man gets married, goes to the army, gets killed, and he has no children. There are more chalitzas than we ever had in the history of the Jewish people. So many young men are killed in the army. So men will get married and say, Harriet Mukadeshusli, on the condition that if I die leaving no children, you won't need chalitza. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that. That's the original case of Masna Masha Kosabat Torah. You can't make such a tanai. Or he says, Harriet Mukadeshusli, on the condition that if the marriage doesn't work out in the first year, you shouldn't need a get. There is no such thing. You can't make a tanai, Masna Masha Kosabat Torah. What if you sell merchandise, or what if you lend money, or what if you go into a business venture together, and you say, I'm going into the business deal on the condition that all the din and machusa should apply. So that's a machleika satanaim, rabmei, rabbiuda, where the bedov shememamen, tenoi kaima, tenoi butl. We pass like rabbiuda. Masna mashakas batar bedov shememamen, tenoi kaim. Call tenoi shememamen, kaim. You can make any tenoi you want. So if the person who's doing a business deal makes it tanai in advance, I'm selling you the merchandise, or I'm buying a share in the corporation, or I'm lending you money on the condition that all the dina machus applies. So kol tanai shememamakai. If the minin kamdina is that we deal in business both with Jews and non-Jews, and the minin kamdina is we always follow dina machus. So whatever is the minin kamdina is considered kilo hisnu. It's considered as if it's implicit, it's self-understood, as if they made it tanai, we want to follow dina machus. So then the Shach quotes from the Mordechai, then the Din of Machusa is binding. That's what the Chazon Ish writes. Then it becomes a Din D'Oraisa. Then the Din of Machusa becomes the Din D'Oraisa. There are Frum Batidinim, Frum in quotation mark, Hasidish Batidinim in the New York area. They say only an Apikorus who went to university would say like that. So the Shach and the Chazon Ish are the Apikorusim who say like that. That's the Halacha. If people deal in business, and the minhag kamdina is that you follow the din of machusa, so the dayanim have to ask a lawyer or a judge, what is the din of machusa and paskin accordingly. They can't paskin what it says in Choshen Mishpat. That's against the din. The din deraisa becomes, if you made a tanai, when you enter into a business venture, I'm going into the business on the condition that we're going to follow the din of machusa, then it becomes a din deraisa. That was the tanai that you made. So you have to follow the din of the machusa in such a case. Has nothing to do with whether you went to university or not. It's ridiculous. People don't know Choshen Mishpat. That says in the Shach, that says in the Chazon Ish. And whatever is Hisnu, whatever the Minhag Hamdina is, considered Kilu Hisnu. That the Shach quotes many Mishnayos like that. There's a Mishnah, one of the many Mishnayos is the beginning of Asarchas Sa'umnim. So the Mishnah says, based on Psukim in Baruch Nafshi, that the worker is really a laborer, al pidin, is obligated to work, a day worker is supposed to work from alois hashachat till lishkiyah. So what happens, let's say, I hire a worker and I agree to pay him $2,000 a week. Comes the end of the week, and he says he wants his $2,000. The Erev Shabbos, he wants his money. I say, well, did you work from alois hashachat till lishkiyah? He says, alois hashachat till lishkiyah. He worked from 9 to 5, like everybody else does. So I say, sorry, you didn't follow the rules and regulations of the Choshen Mishpat. I'm not going to pay you the full salary. So the Mishnah says, if the minhag kamdina is that everybody works from 9 to 5, is considered kilo hisnu, even though you didn't say a word at the time. Kilo, if you were masna, you work from 9 to 5, I'll pay with an hour break for lunch. If I would have said that, and I'll pay you $2,000 a week, and you leave Erev Shabbos for mincha gdoyla an, mincha ktan an, whatever. So whatever conditions I make are binding. So if that's the minhag kamdina, even if you didn't say explicitly, whatever the minhag kamdina is considered kilo hisnu. That's what the Gemara Yerushalmi has the comment, minhag oikar halacha. The din should have been hamoitzim machaver olav haraya. The din should be that the laborer should be entitled to get paid the full salary unless he'll prove that he only has to work from 9 to 5. And the din is he doesn't have to prove it. The burden of proof is not on him. No. The minhag is oikar the halacha. The Minig Hamdina establishes that it's considered Kilo Hisnu, that if he works from 9 to 5, must speak. So that's Oikad Alocha of Hamoitz Machaber, all of Haraya. That is correct. A person who deals in business with Jews and non-Jews. So since when he deals with the non-Jews, he follows Din and the Machusa. And when he deals with the Jews, it's assumed that he's also going to follow Din and Machusa. It's understood. It's Kilu Hisnu.
So correct. Let's say he only deals from Jews, then Choshen Mishra would apply also?
It depends what's understood. So if it's understood, even when he deals with the Fruma Jews, that they all follow Dine Machusa, so that in Skilu Hisnu like that. If it's understood that he's going to follow Dine Atura, okay? Normally we should follow Dine Atura. But
if
that's another din. There's an Issa to go to our court. So you're not allowed to go to the secular court. That's a Chil Hashem. So you have to go to a Bezin of three, but don't go to a Bezin of three rabbis who are sitting and learning above a Mitzvah. Go to three Jewish lawyers, three religious lawyers who will tell you what the Din of the Machus is. There are three lawyers that learn Daf Yomi. There are three lawyers that give Shirin Daf Yomi. There have to be rabbis with beards who preach and teach in yeshivas and so on. The Bezdin should consist of people who know Din of the Machus. Or at least they should have one person. They should at least consult with one person who knows Din of the Machus. There's a prohibition to go to our koyas. Eila mishpatim shtosim lefneim v'lo lefnei our koyas. You're not allowed to go to secular court. Even if the secular court is going to pass on the exact same thing as the bezin, there's a prohibition to go to our koyas. But it's not a prohibition like eating chaza. That's absolutely yosser. It means if you can go to bezin, so then it's an issa to go to our koyas. If you're going to go to bezin, the other guy's not going to come. The other person doesn't want to go to bezin. He's not religious or whatever. If you have no choice, then the Bezdin will give you permission to go to secular court. Or unfortunately, in the New York area, there are a lot of batadinim that are corrupt, that are outright criminals. If you go to a shikara goy in a court, you get a more just judgment a lot of times than going to a Bezdin. So then you go to secular court, unfortunately. If it's just impossible to go to a decent Bezdin, so the Rabbanim will give you permission to go to secular court. Years ago in New York, 80 years ago, there was a shtick that the Jewish landlords would only rent to Jews. They wouldn't want to rent to non-Jews because there were rent control laws, that you're not allowed to charge too much for rent. And these Jewish landlords were charging more than the law allowed. So they would only rent to Jews, and whenever all the parties involved are Jewish, Din al-Machusa doesn't apply. Or the government had minimum wages, laws on minimum wages. So Jewish people owned the factories, so they would only hire Jews, they wouldn't hire non-Jews, and they would pay them less than the minimum wages. And they said, they don't have to follow Din al-Machusa. Din al-Machusa doesn't apply whenever all the parties involved are Jewish. So at that time, the big Pesach in America was Rabbi Henkin, lived in New York, and he wrote a tshuva at that time, which is accepted. He said that cheshbon is not right. When it says in Choshen Mishpat that Din of the Malchusa doesn't apply whenever all the parties involved are Jewish, that means Dinim Choyvel HaMazik and Halvo and Mekach HaMemka, the Din HaTorah apply. We don't follow Din of Malchusa. But that the government makes laws of Tikkun HaMdina, rent control, and the minimum wages that people shouldn't rip each other off, that's another halacha, that the government... The Pasuk in Mishlei says, Melech b'mishpat yamid eretz. The role of the government is to maintain law and order in the country, in the city, in the state, whatever it happens to be, whichever government. So that applies even if all the people involved are Jewish. You have to follow the Din HaMachusa. Let's say the laws of bankruptcy. The halacha has nothing to say about bankruptcy. There is no such thing. But the government in America made an institution all over the world. They made an institution of bankruptcy. So that's a tikkun hamdina. So that applies even if all the parties involved are Jewish. We would follow the Din HaMachus as far as bankruptcy. Same thing in Eretz Yisrael. Even if you hold like that Ran in Adorim, that Din HaMachus doesn't apply in Eretz Yisrael, we don't hold like the Ran. The Shulchan Aruch writes, doesn't even have honorable mention this Ran. Not at all accepted in Shulchan Aruch at all. You do have to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael. The wise guys that don't pay taxes don't realize that it's against the Shulchan Aruch. The Ran B'Shem Tosfos is not accepted. But even if you follow that Ran B'Shem Tosfos, that only goes on taxes. But if the Israeli government made laws that let's say if you rent an apartment and it's leaking or the landlord doesn't give any steam, so you're not mukhif to pay the full rent, you have a right to deduct so much. So this is takonis litikan amdina. So this does apply, even in Eretz Yisrael, it does apply, unless you hold the Israeli government is just a bunch of pirates and there's not a malchus at all. That's dumb a joke. It's worse than under the Tsars. The Tsar's government was a fair government, only the Israeli government, only the Zionists in Eretz Yisrael, they're worse than the Tsars. It's a big joke.
When
Jews
agree on something, then of course would apply in the case where the rent. So he's charging the Jew more rent because he says dinner of Bachus doesn't apply. If it's under duress, it's like stealing from him. In other words, you can have the apartment, you got to pay me $100 more rent than normal. The person doesn't want to. So if he's forced into it because he has no place to live, but
the government says he's not allowed to charge so much rent.
Yeah. So the Jew says, okay, what can I do? I have to pay the guy under duress, in other words.
But if the government says he has a right to bring him to court and reimbursed, so he has a right to, because he ripped him off. Government declared that that's gezel. You're not allowed to do that. Yeah. There's another aspect to Din in the Malchusa. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Pegimel tells about Rab Lozer b'Reb Shimon, the son of the Tana Reb Shimon Bar Choy, the one who was hiding in the cave for all those years with his father studying Zohar. He was a Tana. So what did he do for a living? He was a policeman for the Roman government. They needed a policeman who knew how to speak Yiddish, or whatever language the Jews spoke at that time. Of course, they spoke Yiddish. So they didn't. The Roman policemen, they didn't know how to catch the Jewish criminals. So they needed a Jewish policeman who will be able to identify which are the Jewish criminals. So the Gemara says he had a whole system worked out. They would give the death penalty for Geneva, because by Bnei Noach, the government has an obligation to give the death penalty for anyone who violates any of the Shem Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, and they have a right to give the death penalty even to Jewish people. The Gemara says that Bizman, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Bizman Shein Beis HaMikdash Kaim, you're not allowed to administer Din Nefashis. The Pashtus is that's only a Jewish peasant can administer Din Nefashis. But a Goyish government, of course, can administer Din Nefashis, Bizman Shein Beis HaMikdash Kaim. Why should it depend on? That's the Pashtus. Some Rabbanim published Divrei Torah years ago, 20 years ago, that even the Goyish government is not allowed to administer Din Nefashis Bizman Shein Beis HaMikdash Kaim. It's against all the Gemaras. The Favorish in the Gemaras. So the Gemara says that not only does the Goyish government have the right to administer Din Nefashis to the non-Jews who steal, the Goyish government, the Jewish policeman, Rab Lozer b'Reb Shimon, has a right to work for the Roman police, to arrest Jewish criminals based on circumstantial evidence, even on Bezdin, we would never accept circumstantial evidence to administer Din Nefashis. He can arrest the criminals and give them Din Nefashis, even though the Jewish criminals, give them Din Nefashis based on circumstantial evidence. That's a Beferish Gemara in the Bava Metzia Daf Pei Gimel, and the Shita Mukubetzes quotes the Ritva, who says like that. And the Ran in Sanhedrin, Daf Mevav, quotes the same Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Pei Gimel, and he points out the same thing. The Dvar Avram is a Sefer Shadas HaTshuvas that's three volumes written by the last rabbi in Kovna. He died in the Kovna ghetto before the Nazis had a chance to kill him. He died from a disease because the conditions were so unhealthy, so he died. So he was a big goyin. He learned in Valozhin by Rab Chaim Soloveitchik in Valozhin Yeshiva. So he has the three halakim, three volumes of Dvar Avram. So the first tshuva, and the first volume is a long tshuva about Din HaMalchus. Since he has a long footnote in the tshuva where he points out there are different, totally different aspects of Din HaMalchus. One is minting coins, and one is taxation, and one is introducing the laws, Miron Machavera, and then the government has the right to maintain law and order, to give the death penalty even to Jewish criminals, and even a Jewish policeman can arrest them based on circumstantial evidence. The Gemara says that this Rab Lozer b'Reb Shimon had a system worked out. He would look around when the people would be eating breakfast, who would be yawning over breakfast, who was tired. So if it was a person who seems to be a Talmid Chacham, so he would assume he was probably up late learning and he didn't sleep enough, So he wouldn't assume that he was a ganef. But if he was not a learned person, and there would be a ganeva the night before, so based on that, the guy's yawning during breakfast, he would assume that he must have been a ganef. And the Gemara says he was always right. He never guessed wrong. And he gave the death penalty based on this circumstantial evidence. The Gemara says, Eliyahu Nabi appeared to him and he said, it's not a nice job for a nice Jewish boy. Why don't you go do something else for a living? Write a sefer, write Tikkuni Zohar or something. Work with your father, Machon or something. So he left. Okay, so he left. But he didn't tell him that it's Keneged Adin. He didn't tell him that it's Mesira. Sifin Gemara is not a violation of Mesira. Mesira is when it's Shalik Adin. This is not a violation of Mesira. The Gemara in the first parak in Gittin discusses Dina the Machus Adina with respect to Kinyonim. If the Goyish government institutes Chukim and Mishpotim as to what's considered a Kinyon, so if a Jew made a Kinyon with a non-Jew based on Dina Machus, so the Halacha would recognize that Kinyon. When we do Mechiras Chametz, so we're selling metaltalim to the Goy, so it's a big Machlekes in the Rishonim, how exactly do you sell metaltalim to a non-Jew? So because the whole machlekes of the Ksos HaChoshen, Mishneh Berurah quotes the Ksos HaChoshen. Ksos HaChoshen says we make six kinyonim, because we're not sure which one works. So one of the six kinyonim is we make a kinyon according to the laws of New York State, according to Din in the Machusa. So everybody holds from Din in the Machusa, so what do you need the other five kinyonim for? The Gemara says Din in the Machusa is good. So the issue is there's a machlekes in the Mefarshim and Choshen Mishpah, the Beishmuel on Ebenezer, and the Dvar Avram has a long arichas on that, whether the kinyonim that are based on Dina Machusa, whether they're valid men atoira, or they're only valid men the Rabbanon. The Beishmuel wants to say that the kinyon based on Dina Machusa, that doesn't correspond to kinyonim of the Torah, only is valid men the Rabbanon, and that's the issue. Maybe there's not sufficient to avoid violation of Bal Yerah Bai Motzi. Maybe for the purposes of avoiding Bal Yerah Bai Motzi, you have to have a kinyon that's a kinyon men atoira. Maybe a kinyon and the Rabbanon is not sufficient. That's the pikpuk also when we do a kinyon agav. So there's a tois in Bava Kama. We rent a room in everyone's apartment, and then agav, the room that we're renting to the non-Jew, we sell all the chametz to the non-Jew. So that's a kinyon agav. So the Ksos HaChoshen has the pikpuk on the kinyon agav, that there's a tois in Bava Kama and Daf Yud Aleph, but tois is mechadish based on the Gemara. The kinyon agav is only made the Rabbanon, because there's no pasuk in Chumash. The whole makar for kinyan agav is a pasuk in Dibre Hayomim. So Tosa says Dibre Torah and Dibre Kabbalah loy afinam. So the whole kinyan agav is only mid Rabbanon. So maybe kinyan agav is only mid Rabbanon. Maybe it's not good enough to solve the problem of Bal Yerah Bai Motzi Derais. And that's why we make another four kinyanim. Each kinyan has a question about it. So that's why we, bottom line, we make the six kinyanim. We mentioned before that. Many poskim are of the opinion, that's why it says in Choshen Mishpat, that the Goyish government has one of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach as Dinim, and included in Dinim is that they have a right to make up a whole legal system, Dinim Amunis. So that's when at least one of the parties is non-Jewish, then Dinim Machus applies. And all the parties involved are Jewish, then we follow Choshen Mishpat. Then it says in Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Tshuvas Rashba, then we follow Choshen Mishpat, except for those exceptions to the rule that the Shach said, whenever it's Kilu Hisnu. So the Rav Moah has a famous Tshuva Yud. This is Shalva Tshuva Sarama. I think I mentioned the other day that this was the first time the Tshuva Sarama was ever printed in block letters. The Rav Moah himself writes why he was makbet to print it in Rashi script. So Rabbi Osher Ziv, used to teach Tanakh here in the college. So he was the first one, he writes, he's proud, he was the first one to print the Tshuva Sarama and block letters, and it's very neat with the footnotes. He brags about that, and he got the pras Harav Kook, I think, for putting out such a good edition, but that was against the wishes of the Ramah. The Ramah himself explains why Al-Pidin, he felt that it was improper to print it, and block letters should be printed in Rashi script. So in the Tshuvas HaRamah, Simen Yud, there's a very first. Some of the Tshuvas are more famous than the others. This is the most famous Tshuva in the Ramah. No, I take it back. So the second most famous. Most famous Tshuva is when he had a chuppah on Friday night, in the middle of the night. So that's the most famous tshuva. And the second most famous tshuva in the Tshuvas HaRamah, Simen Yud, he was a cousin, the Ramah was a cousin of the Maharam Padua. His name was Katznellenbogen. Padua was a city in Italy with a Sfardim, but his cousin was an Ashkenazi. Maharam Padua was an Ashkenazi, and he was a rabbi in Padua. So Maharam Padua put out the Rambam, an edition of the Rambam with Hagos on the bottom. That's the standard edition of the Rambam we have. The tiny letters on the bottom, when it says look on the tour, it says in Tfus Venezia, it doesn't have that gear. So once in a while they have one or two lines, one line every five pages. So that's the Hagoyas of the Maran Padua. So he put out an edition of the Rambam, and then another Goyish publisher, soon after, he saw the Rambams are selling, so he printed also an edition of the Rambam. He didn't have the Hagoyas of the Maran Padua, so he printed a standard, a plain Rambam without the Hagoyas of the Maran Padua. So the Ramo, very strange, he doesn't write that it's his cousin. That was a little unfair. Should have written Maran Padua was his cousin. So he writes a whole tshuva there. Four reasons why no one is allowed to buy the Goy's edition. Justinian was a publisher in Venice. So he says, no one's allowed to buy the Goy's edition of the Rambam. Everybody has to buy the Maran Padua's edition. And he gives four reasons. Tam Rishon, Tam Sheni, Tam Shlishi, Tam Ravi. So he develops a whole theme that Dina the Machus Adina doesn't mean that the non-Jews have the right to make up their own rules and regulations. They have to follow everything that it says in Chosh Mishpat. That's not the way it seems to be in Chosh Mishpat. In Chosh Mishpat, it sounds like the Goyish government has the right to make up their own rules, but if all the parties involved are Jewish, then we don't follow that. We follow Chosh Mishpat. But to say everything that it says in Chosh Mishpat is binding on all the non-Jews, he quotes the Ramban HaChumash, says like that. That Dinim for the non-Jews means all the Chof Talad Ovis Nezikim. Chav Talad Ovis Nezikin, it can't be. Some of them are Oynes HaMefata Moitzi Shemra Kefil Daladei. The Gemara said the Feirish that Knas is not a chelik of Dinim. Dinim of the non-Jews only applies to Mom and not to Knas. So it's a difficult Ramban. Ramban already said it goes me. He says all the Chav Talad Ovis Nezikin apply to the non-Jews. It can't be so. But that's the famous Tshuvas HaRamo. He thinks that the non-Jews are obligated to observe everything that it says in Chosh Mishpat. Yesterday we were talking about copyright and patents. When a person prints his own sefer, I come up with a chiddush, or I put out a tape of nigunim, or I develop a certain system on a computer to be able to put the information together. So because I made the chiddush, I'm entitled to make money on it. What if I print a Rambam? What if I print a Shas? I didn't invent the Shas. I didn't invent the Rambam. So that's what the Ramo talks about over here. His cousin printed a Rambam. So you can't say his cousin was not the Bala Mecharish of it. He printed. The Rambam maybe has the rights and privileges, but the Rambam is not in the picture. The Yorshim of the Rambam are not here. They're not going to claim that they want the royalties for selling the Rambam. So there's a tshuva also in the Koheles Yankov. Koheles Yankov is a sefer shah. This is a tshuva written by the author of the Mishkanes Yankov. Mishkanes Yankov was Rabbi Yankel Karlina. He was a big misnagid. He was a rabbi in Karlin with the Karlina Hasidim. So he has a lot of tshuvas in his sefer attacking the Hasidim for their practices when he doesn't agree with them. They used to be medaktik dafket to spend a fortune of money to get a green esrog. So he says green esrog is puzzle. They're spending the money to buy puzzle esrog. He has other things where he attacks the practices of the Hasidim. So he has all the big tshuvas are in the Mishkanes Yankov. Then after printing that, whatever tshuvas were left over, he printed here in the Sefer Koheles Yankov. So he has here Chelek Chosh Mishpat Simen Beis is a very important tshuva that he lived in the early 1800s. He was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhin, and when they first opened Volozhin Yeshivas, from the first group of Talmidim. And Rav Soloveitchik used to tell over that he used to go visit every year. He used to visit Volozhin, the yeshiva, and Rav Chaim Volozhin was always mechabed him to give a shiur in the yeshiva. He's a big, Talmud Chacham. So he has the tshuva, a publishing firm printed a shas. And the Rabbanim said that was the practice, and the Rabbanim printed letters with the shas. No one else has a right to print the shas for the next 5 years. What's the idea behind it? That if someone else is going to print the shas within 5 years, it's going to come out that I laid out all this money and I didn't even break even. So people are going to stop putting their neck out. People are going to stop printing tanachs and printing shas, and they may lose all of their money. So they used to guess, the rabbanim used to guess, how many years do you think it's going to take until not only will he break even, but he'll make a little profit on it, so it'll turn out that he didn't lose. And it paid off, so to encourage people that they should go into the printing business, they should print svarim that are needed for the community. So what happened was, they printed a shas, one publishing firm printed a shas, and the Rabbanu wrote the Haskama 5 years. Within 3 years, they sold out all the svarim that they had. So they sold everything else. So another publishing firm grabbed the opportunity, they sold everything. So they finished. So even though they had the right, no one had the right to print for 5 years, means we assume it may take up to 5 years for them to sell so many copies that they'll not only break even, but they'll even make a little profit. But here they already sold everything out, so another firm printed a shah. So then they sued them, they made a whole dinter. So all of the Gdolim said, and he refers in earlier generations, the Shaila came up generation after generation. So he quotes, all the Gdolim held that this cherem that the Rabbanon would make, no one else has a right to print it, is a takana de Rabbanon that the Chachamim make in each generation with a reason. And whenever the reason doesn't apply, so the whole cherem doesn't apply. So he says he's in disagreement with Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius. Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius was a contemporary of his. He was the one who had the whole machlokes, the Mishkanes Yankov had the machlokes about Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius, about the Erevin in Europe. Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius lived in Brod, that's in Galicia. He was a businessman. He was not the rabbi in Brod. The rabbi in Brod at that time was the author of the Lev Aryeh on Chulin, who was not as famous as his businessman, Balabas. And the Balabas wrote tshuvas to all over the world, the Beis Ephraim. So this Beis Ephraim, he defended the practice in Europe to have a Reuven all over, and the Mishkanes Yankiv was trying to shoot down all a Reuven. He was opposed to all a Reuven. He has tshuvas, and Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius won. Bottom line, in all the communities, they used to make a Reuven. They didn't listen to the Mishkanes Yankiv. See here, he has a tshuva. He says the one who was opposed, the one who insisted that no one else allowed to print the shas till 5 years are up, even though the first publisher sold out all the copies, Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius. And he said, whenever Bezna makes a gzera, even though the reason for the gzera no longer applies, the gzera still applies. So no one's allowed to print another shas till the 5 years are up. And he rips it apart. He has a very long shetshuv, and he explains why it's not so. And he quotes that all the gdolim said this way. And he's quoting all the names in the earlier generations and that generation. They all held like that. That's a different kind of a copyright. That's not a copyright. Because I created the shvach, whoever creates shvach is koinit and he has the right to make money on it. There's a different vort in order to encourage people to go into the publishing business. And then his ikar vort, just the tamtzis of the vort is, take for example, he doesn't quote all the mishalim, there are many mishalim. Take for example, there's a mishnah in Megillah that if a koin is a balmum, he's not allowed to be makar of karbonis in the Beis HaMikdash, but he is permitted to duchen. But if he has mumin, but part of Yadav Haviraglov, we don't permit him to duchen, because when he's going to duchen, people are going to be staring at his hands or at his face. So Rabbi Yosef Kara writes that Bismanazen, in the 1500s, they started a minig that the Kohanim put the talus over the face, he can't see the face. And then in American news, they put the talus over the hands. The Chavetz Chaim lived in Poland, so he says in Poland, the Kohanim would only cover the face and the hands would be exposed. He writes in Mishnah Brewery, he writes in Lithuania, they will cover over their hands also. So if the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Kara writes, if they cover their face or they cover their hands, so there's nothing to see anyway. So whole din in the Mishnah doesn't apply. So the question, but what happened to the rule, Davish of Minyan, Tzach Minyan Achal Atira? Whenever the Chachamim make a din de Rabbanon, even if you live in a generation where the reason doesn't apply, the din de Rabbanon still applies. So the Mishkanes Yankov explains there's an exception to the rule. Whenever the Takana de Rabbanu was Bakiras Dovin HaTorah, you're telling a person not to duchen. That's against what it says in the Chumash. So there, the Takana has to be with the reason for the Takana has to be incorporated into the Takana. Whenever the reason for the Takana is incorporated into the Takana, then it doesn't have the status of Dovah Shemimim. So whenever the reason doesn't apply, then the Takana doesn't apply. He has a lom de shetshuv. He explains on the level of the raisa, that's the din. Whenever there's a din de raisa and the reason is written next to the mitzvah, so whenever the reason doesn't apply, the whole mitzvah doesn't apply. So he says over here, publishing Rambams and publishing Gemaras, this is a mitzvah. We should really encourage everybody to publish, but we're afraid if someone else is going to publish within the 5 years, he's going to lose his money. So this will discourage everybody from going into the publishing business. So we make a takana b'akiras davman atara. No one should publish for 5 years. But you have to have the Tama Takana has to be incorporated into the Takana, otherwise it's Akira's Dovin HaTorah. So whenever the reason doesn't apply, then the whole Takana doesn't apply. Okay, tomorrow Blinetta we'll be discussing how to make an Erev in one easy lesson. Not exactly.